Dr. Robert G. Beezer, scientist in charge of the Department of Defense's Alien Incursion Response Team, pulled up to the security checkpoint which fronted Hangar 52. Ernesto, the guard, acknowledged the doctor, peered at the passengers in the back seat of the old Hudson wingback, then smiled and waved at Bobby, Beezer's 11-year-old son. His reaction to Ninkota, Bobby's exchange student friend from Rangoon, was strained, though, because Ninkota had dyed her hair translucent, and Ernesto imagined he saw alien life forms hunkered down by the roots. But then Ernesto saw extraterrestrial entities everywhere. When he began working at Hangar 52 in 1957, he really did see them everywhere. From all across the galaxy, they came to exchange ideas with and experiment on humans, and Hangar 52 in Roswell, New Mexico, was the nerve center from which all unearthly activity radiated. But in the intervening 40 years, most of the aliens had died or teleported back to their home worlds or had been reconfigured as aluminum zirconium. Today, most aliens carried green cards and hailed from Zacatecas or Toronto. Hangar 52, too, bore little resemblance to its GAFS or Golden Age of Flying Saucers heyday. In 1995, a cafe and gift shop opened in what had once been the finest extraterrestrial language lab in the world. Studio Z, the formerly top-secret artificial intelligence research facility, was now a daycare center staffed by aides whose only paranoia was radioactive diaper rash. Dr. Beezer escorted Bobby and Ninkota to his office next to New Mexico's MUFON headquarters. He smiled to himself. In the 1980s, the Mutual UFO Network had wangled an outpost at the facility by employing a pluperfect clause in the Freedom of Information Act. After a decade of openly biased scientific scrutiny, however, they had determined that extraterrestrial activity was more prevalent in a Baltimore shopping mall, and so they moved the bulk of their staff to the East Coast. Only Friar Fellini remained at the Hangar 52 office. Like Ernesto, Friar had also seen untold numbers of alien life forms. But unlike Ernesto, Friar saw his through the bottom of a sparkling wine bottle. Dr. Beezer's office walls were lined with ant farms, most of which had gaping holes in their sides and no tenants. The few that remained hermetically sealed bore the offspring of those Parolians who had mated with Earth ants. They were a disappointing progeny. They had none of the acute telepathic skills of the space travelers, nor the social graces of the terrestrial harvesters. Their body components had degenerated too, with hooded eyes, pink beaks, and nose talons, they more closely resembled the creations of a frustrated B-movie costume designer who had been staring at the world too long through the bottom of a sparkling wine bottle than they did an attempt at alien inseminated evolution. While Dr. Beezer attended to business, Bobby and Ninkota were free to roam the facility. As they frequently did, they raced to the AART Spaceship Museum, where the alien transport pod mock-up, codenamed the X-252 APT, awaited hands-on investigation. Modeled after the craft in which the Parolians crash-landed, the X-252 APT was too small for grown men and women to comfortably fit in, but was just right for the pre-teen crowd. Bobby and Ninkota strapped themselves into the formica chairs, and Ninkota tapped one of the six articulated stalks on the control pad in front of her. the chairs raised and lowered in response, and a bank of lights on an overhead data screen winked on and off sequentially. From past experience, they knew this meant the transport pod was gassed up and ready to go. However, without the launch code, they weren't going anywhere outside of the cafeteria for a snack in a little while. Until then, it was fun to just let their imaginations wander. Meanwhile, Dr. Beezer, having run the latest memorandum from the Parolians through the Elsewhere language paraphraser, was experiencing an anxiety attack. Originally thought to have been a harmless holiday greeting, the extremely tiny and bostrophedonically written words were no less than an ultimatum from a superior intelligence irked at four decades of, to them, inferior living conditions.
Sound like bostrophedonical complaints.
That's
to me.
It? Yes, yes. We'll explain bostrophedon later. It said, quote, immediately return us 68,000 X-252 spacecraft, Parolian Queen Bug Vital Fluid, and 200 xenotides, approximately 40 years, he calculated, lifespans, or suffer Earth-wide holocaust that reduces mankind to weasel spit equivalent and makes devastation caused by Antarian sapsucker in pale comparison. This final is offer, end quote. The desire for their own spacecraft Beezer could appreciate. He also understood, though did not agree with, their ire toward the ant farm housing. But the Queen Bug Vital Fluid reference made no sense at all. Unless...
Unless...
Ellipsis after that. Terrified, Beezer rang the AIRT command center. Five rings. Six. Seven. And still no answer. He hung up and dialed channel 41 on his CB radio. Turning down the squelch control, he was able to make out a mysteriously vocoded voice intoning over and over again the Athabascan word for flamboyant. Followed by this, the 136th episode of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, this portion of which is gradually being absorbed by mitigating circumstances beyond our control, but fortunately not beyond the radiophonic frequency endurance of Calvos.
Calvos is here. He has decided to become squelched along with the Athabascans. And let Sidewinder by Morton Sabotnik carry it away.
Thank you.
Bits from Morton Sabotnik's Sidewinder, a piece performed on the what did he call it? The
what? Was that a booklet?
The
what?
Electronic Music Box, he calls it. There's a
really?
Lovely photo on this LP of something that certainly looks booklet boxish, but it's from
What year was it? About 70?
About 1970, yes.
1970, Sidewinder, Morton Sabotnik. Wow, great tune. Well, it's new releases until 3, and then the final portion of our Lorithon.
Unless she calls in and adds some more to her tale.
I don't know that that's possible. I don't think we've ever given her the telephone number here. And we have not yet posted her shows on the Internet, so she can't hear it.
Well, she moves in mysterious ways, however.
She does, mysterious ways.
Waves, I meant.
Waves, mysterious mice. At 3 o'clock, the final portion of our interview with Laurie Spiegel, in which Calvos demonstrates his inability to be intuitive for all to hear.
Now this is not the case. This is just a different approach, we think.
Not according to the mouse maestress.
She was icky that day.
She was frustrated with Calvos' inability to be intuitive. But we'll wait till 3 o'clock. In the meantime, talking about things that don't appear to be terribly intuitive, this is new releases. We have 4 new releases and 1 pre-release. The first is one of 2 from a CD company in Germany, in Mülheim an der Ruhr, called No Edition.
Yeah?
Well, and it will all become clear.
Oh, good.
We'll listen to the opening 3 brief sections of Erika Jürgen's Auto Radio and other stuff, which will be announced as part of the piece. Music from the modern Germany.
Auto Radio e.V. Hearing Aid Society und andere Melomanen. Musik hören, laut Lehrmeinung, typisch schizophren. Jetzt beginnen die Experten, die Sache neu zu verstehen. Ein Bericht von Erika Jürgens.
Intermezzo, lacrimoso sostenuto. Music by Erika Jürgens.
That really isn't called that, really. So this is what they listen to in the New Germany?
In the New Germany, yes. And that's with computer, electric guitar, and clarina.
Ah, I think it was the clarina that started to whet my appetite for more.
And in case you were wondering what the opening was about, it said, hearing music? According to the school of thought typically schizophrenic, now experts begin to understand this object in a new way.
The new way. It's always the new way.
The new way.
I'm not satisfied with the status quo. It has to be the new way.
Indeed. Well, let's move along.
Oh,
then.
Yes.
To a new release from, actually not a new release, but new to us, from Carson Kiefman, one of the Latter-day Symphonists. This recorded in 1995.
I thought we were moving along.
We are. We're about to.
Oh, all right.
And I just want to give it time.
Please.
To hear out the end of the Erika Jürgens. And that the first section of 19 on that auto radio.
It's, and in fact, a good thing that you did let it play because I would have missed that transition.
Right.
But now, the
Carson Kiefman, yes, Carson Kiefman. His Symphony No. 2. He also has a new recording coming out, which he will forward us as soon as it's available. This is Symphony No. 2, the third movement with the Polish National Radio Symphony Orchestra of Katowice. And the choir, which I'm not sure that we'll hear in this movement, David Gier conducting. Are you ready?
Oh, always.
symphonic music, alive and well.
Well, well.
In the hands of Carson Kiefman. That's the third movement of his Symphony No. 2 from 1995.
Actually, being a big Wozzeck fan, I did like one quote in there. That
you like the quote, the way it just sort of was lifted right out of Wozzeck? Actually, there are quite a number of quotes lifted from other pieces in the course of this symphony. I've listened to all of it, and my head kept popping up saying, oh, I know that tune. Carson Kiefman actually will be our guest next summer. He'll be coming through.
With his orchestra?
Live here, with all 10 digits.
Wow.
How about a little change of pace? Say yes.
Sure, go right ahead.
This is Ernesto Diaz Infante. This is a solo piano album called It's Up. This is the first of his Pax Preludes. Now, just so you don't get the wrong idea, and maybe that I've made a mistake, everything on this CD sounds like this one.
Oh, all right.
So no choice would have made much difference.
Play on.
Ernesto Diaz Infante, the first of his Pax Preludes. We don't give it a chance. We really don't. I mean, this does work if you kind of put it on the machine and are not being distracted by other things.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think...
It's very nice. It's very nicely done. Very simple.
Yes, simple. Simply, how did you say?
deceptively simple or simply deceptive? Actually, the theme of today's show on the Calvos and Damian New Music Bazaar on WGDR Plainfield.
And aren't we about to institute a new phrase for the show that was given us by a media tycoon?
A media tycoon, a media specialist who captioned us. And he said...
I was hoping you would remember.
Ah, he said, if you think classical music is unpopular, wait till you hear cutting-edge classical music.
That's right, and that's us.
That's us, cutting-edge classical music. One more piece in the new releases before we release.
Oh, do.
This is one more from No Edition. This from simply a guy called NN and his group. This is called Auferstehung der begrabenen Hunde, subtitled Undercover Versions in quotation marks.
Oh, yeah.
And the title of the first cut, they love these long titles, the English translation provided is Song in a Free Saxon Dialect According to the Pattern of Rotter, Markush, and Parish, preformed by Lester Pulfus besides his wife Iris, completed in the sense of the invisibility of Iris's sister.
Thank you.
N und ähnliche Elemente with whatever the name of that tune was.
The invisibility of Iris's sister.
That's the best part, yeah. Unsichtbarkeit von Iris Schwester.
Yeah.
From Auf, what's that mean? Auferstehung der begrabenen Hunde.
That's something that Iris's sister did that we're not allowed to talk about over the radio.
The begrabenen Hunde. Yeah. Oh, and ending the new releases segment of our show today.
All too soon.
Well, all right, there'll be more next week. I have a few more items coming in that will be most entertaining.
Swell, maybe I'll get a lot in by then, too.
Yeah. Well, on the deceptively simple, simply deceptive show today, let's turn to the last segment of our interview with Laurie Spiegel in New York City, in which Calvos attempts to use Music Mouse. Now, Damien successfully used Music Mouse in last week's segment.
However, it did sound an awful lot like the Mouse Maestress.
But I didn't see you getting sort of all, you know, muscularly tight around your buns over this.
No, it was just a toy. It was just something that runs here and there. It was very pleasant.
So it was, and you seem to have no trouble. Well, here we go, picking up just about at the point where Calvos has seated himself before the mouse and is attempting to understand what the little white dot on the screen is. The little white dot on the screen afflicts his issue here for the entire time until Laurie does point out that the little white dot really is just an artifact of 2 points crossing. Here we go, back to New York City.
Well. This is Calvus's take on things. Now, these guys will unmute your other three voices, and the enter key will bring them all out. Now, one of them on this axis, you're missing one. Now, you can selectively mute them. It really needs reverb, and I should have put some on it. Like the rest of your music. Just kidding. You may want to vary it a little by changing the tempo here. Plus minus the tempo. Turn off the repeat note function that's on G for grouping. Then
I'm doing it.
Well, why don't we start you more simply? Why don't we go
simply?
Let's start with reinitializing to the factory presets.
Okay.
Laurie Spiegel's recipe for.
Okay, now,
on this axis is this one voice, and on this axis is this. I recommend starting very slowly and gently, as Cal did, and really listening and feeling for what to do next, what you want to move or change next. Well, that's the thing, it has a bias against that, sorry. But if you wanted to jump around, okay, stop for a second, I'll show you. Let me show you. Just hold down the mouse button, and wherever you come up, if you want the notation display, it's under on the display menu. But with the grid, it's easier to see what's happening if you're not used to the mouse being your pitch cursor. This is the most tonal music anyone will ever hear from Cal, so enjoy
that's
it.
That's absolutely true. He's looking for the nasty sound makers. Where are the ugly instruments?
Well, you try. Why don't you try some of these? Okay. Well, the Q, U, E, R, T, Y keys are different modes. Now, they also generate, so leave the mouse still for a moment and just listen. I'm playing that just by hitting keys on the keyboard, changing amongst these different harmonic modes.
That was a really bad student, wasn't
it? It'll also play from the keyboard.
You're trying to learn ahead of the curve.
And C will put it back to its original transposition. This F changes the axis that this floater voice is on from horizontal to vertical, up to strobing speeds. And knowing you, you probably would feel comfortable with octatonic and some kind of super fast running pattern, which you can change. Each of these keys has a different pattern. And then you can play everything textually with timbral stuff. This is me playing on these fader keys. What I'm doing is I just had it. Okay, let me show you. Slow it down. What it's doing, you'll hear it slowly. You hit A for automate, and then the number keys 1 through 9 and 0 select different patterns. It's like this is what has been called, sorry Phil, a Phil Glass generator mode. And then the rhythmic patterns are here on it.
I'm still clueless. I'm still entirely clueless.
Well, you have to read. You have to read the manual. But they're here. Chord are. You can't create. No, there's only what's built in. Everything is not user definable yet. Ultimately, it would be, you know, in a general form of the program.
You just don't have that Phil Glass affinity.
I don't.
And make everything generalizable as a single multi-dimensional musical space. But I haven't been able to do everything I've wanted to do in very many aspects of my life and work. And change instrument with the U and
I detect
key.
Great potential in the advertising field for you.
Yeah, so far.
Hit them gently and
what
you
know, am I doing?
One number
I'm sitting there saying,
home
what
home
am I doing? I don't have a clue. She keeps saying slow down. And
Okay.
I couldn't see anything either.
You need your bifocals readjusted if you can't read this because it's down here.
No, and this is you.
Oh, okay. I see. Well, that'll, you know, if you can't read the screen, that's not. Well, why don't you try sticking with something for a little while and developing it? No, because you're hitting keys constantly. That's why it keeps doing stuff. You toggle the A thing off and it stops. The A is a switch. It's a toggle switch. Hit it once and it starts playing by itself. Hit it again and it stops. And
that's you, Calvus. That tune is
that's
right
better.
I set it to basically an unpredictable rhythm in an octatonic mode with and the interval of transposition is how much it steps every time you hit the transpose up or down key. The voices? Well, I'd say contrary motion is probably the best bet. Maybe two on each axis. Let's get out of that stiff rhythm. Let's look at this on a score display. Now, when you hold the button down, you see where they are, the notes. Okay, there they are. For our listening audience.
I think by now we have no listening audience.
It's very likely.
I think we're going to cut the Calvos section. The Calvos is still mystified understanding how those notes are being selected.
But once again, how does this print? Or
the versions that are out that people have don't have the notation. It's really simple. You record a section in buffer, and when you load it from this way, you save it last time, and you just select print. Okay. Yeah. It's like it's on the menu. You just select it. And
does it print in either that format or the other?
It prints just such for no duration. It's just note heads or voice numbers. Or unless you use a higher res. The high-res, the dense packing option, which is for looking at overall form, scrunch score, which is, let's see. Now you can really see the shape of the voicings. It's an architectural level of music. You're not playing the individual notes, you're playing the compositional variables in the overall form, and it starts people off playing on the level of phrasing and macrostructures rather than finding the right notes that doesn't sound like the wrong notes.
But I guess the Xenakis would like this a lot.
God, you know, I never got to show this to him. I haven't. I don't think I was. The last time I saw him was 83.
Do you have a telephone number so we could. Casey's over in Paris?
I might.
As you can hear, Calvos is sort of in the background doing his very best to make some sense out of this. He's not doing awfully well, but...
Skipped ahead a bit.
We could go back to simplicity. I mean, it's very simple. I kind of explained it.
I know, but some of us don't catch on to those
sorts
of things.
Okay, hang on a second.
This is 10 minutes later now.
I get rid of all those other voices.
Okay, you mute them.
There they
okay, are. You see the voices displayed are voices 1, 2, 3, and 4. Let's get rid of 1, 2,
I couldn't find
3.
Thing
okay.
To do that.
Now you just have 1, and there it goes. Now it's diatonic, but you can't tell because it's percussion sound. Let's make it more legato. Whoa. Let's do that. That's chintzy.
And so we'll just move on a little bit further, and the final moments of depressive characteristics here.
But in terms of what it's really doing, you see you have on two axes, you have two voices. I'm not sure.
Yeah, except I don't understand that.
Well,
I understand it intellectually, but I don't understand it musically. The other one I understand
musically. It's not a question of musical or intellectual. Where is the sound? Why are we not hearing anything in that voice? Is this something why the synthesizer's voice?
She's about to lay it on me now. Here we go. It's not musical. It's not intellectual.
It's a question of intuitively.
Yeah.
Not musically or intellectually.
There it is.
You
I'm
move
not good at intuitive now here. We're
well,
not very good at intuitive.
Well, music maybe is... You know, a field where things like that are sometimes useful, but you move in this direction and that one, and moves up and down that way. You move sideways and that one moves. If you want to have it doubled with something, in this case, in contrary motion.
I don't understand the intersection of the two axes.
One of them shows the pitches you've got going on this axis. when you move this thing, look at my hand a second, this way.
Yeah, but the point at which the two intersect, what's the significance of that?
There's no particular significance.
Oh, I've been looking at that point, wondering what that point meant this whole time. When you had the two crossing, you had the two white dots.
The white dots.
Oh, okay.
See?
Well, sorry, but it's much simpler and more intuitive than that.
More simple.
That's
more
me. Deceptively simple.
You're moving that way.
Yeah, well, that wasn't exactly working out either, and we're well into a half hour of me attempting to do anything with the mouse of music here, so.
Yeah, I think it's mine stopped.
Mine probably has.
Oh, jeez, mine stopped quite a while ago.
You have 4 minutes left. I do. Well, the Calvo section will
I
not,
think mine
will
stopped
not make
quite
it
a while
appear,
ago.
I'm afraid.
Mine didn't run long. I must have accidentally leaned on the remote, because it only seems to have recorded another 10 minutes or so after.
So we're struggling now with batteries.
But as I recall, this did tend to dampen your career as a lounge performer.
It did. I was totally out of lounge, out of lounge, out of lizards, out of lava.
So I guess that's probably part of it.
Not a player?
No.
You don't play anything?
I used to.
See, now he whimpers and whines for a while. Talks about he used to play the clarinet, he used to play the violin, he doesn't do it anymore, he doesn't like to play anything, so, well. So we could kind of wrap it up, you know. You're sitting in the background. You had a good time.
Could you do it on the music mouse?
Now, this one of the little constraints on this program is that you cannot play any music that's already existed on it. It doesn't let you play stuff that already exists. You can only make up new stuff.
Do you mean to say that you cannot repeat what you've already played on?
You can repeat what you've done exactly, because there's nothing random in it. But you cannot. Well, with great, great difficulty, you could play, you know, a tune. You could work it out, but it's just, it's not a device meant for random access to individual notes.
And there's the key.
Right.
You know, your typical. I mean, it's.
That stopped the conversation right dead.
But it will be taken up again in Laurie Part 4.
Right. We're very grateful for your coffee and hospitality and mouseness and everything connected with this particular interview, and we hope to do more in the future episode of the Calvos and Damian New Music Sesquihour on the road, not from Plainfield, Vermont, but, alas, New York City.
Why alas?
Sorry, alas was the wrong word. Thank goodness from New York City.
Or one place is as good as another in different respects.
There are many places where we have been that are not nearly as good as other places, many of which we passed through on the train this very day.
The most difficult half hour of any interview ever conducted by me.
I can recall a few right here in this studio that have been a little lengthy.
Well, yeah, but that was a very difficult time. I still have no clue, since the thing only runs on a Macintosh, an instrument which I do not own. I still have not had a chance to explore it any further. I was clueless from the beginning to the end. Apparently, you know, like kids 3 years old can use this thing. Musicians and rock bands use this thing. Composers, you know, with lots of letters next to their name use this thing. But I, little Calvos, seated before it, was clueless for minutes on end. And 2 years since.
Yes, this is not necessarily a bad thing, because you have gone on to other. Never mind.
Let's get on to, since that was supposedly deceptively simple and intuitive, to our theme, deceptive simplicity, simple deceptiveness, or, if you will, switching adjective and verb, deceptively simple, simply deceptive.
Oh, yeah. So what do you have in mind? If this was deceptively simple to you?
Certainly not.
No, of course not.
How about toy piano?
Always a fond.
We can both relate to that.
Yes, indeed.
Here's John Cage's Suite for Toy Piano. Whew. From 1948, John Cage's Suite for Toy Piano.
I think it's important to know that that piano did not have any black keys on it. They were painted on. They did not have functional black keys in 1948. That came a few years later.
Oh, yeah, they just kept things dysfunctional in 1948.
Exactly.
I understand.
Yes, yes.
That played on an extraordinarily good recording called In a Landscape, played by Stephen Drury. He plays music for Marcel Duchamp, which is a wonderful piece. A Valentine Out of Season, the Prelude for Meditation, a very short work from 1944, and others. Great thing. On Catalyst Records, limited edition really, only available through BMG, the Bertelsmann Group, very small run of that. So, well worth checking that out.
And
well,
deceptively so simple it
deceptively
was.
Deceptively simple. That, I think, comes under the category of deceptively simple. The next, Nick Collins, Broken Light. A piece I think is absolutely wonderful, but is it deceptively simple or simply deceptive? It is for modified compact disc player and string quartet.
Well, we'll let the audience be the judge.
There it is. The second movement of Broken Light for String Quartet and Modified CD Player by Nick Collins.
I'm not going to answer if it's
all right.
Simply deceptive.
Then on to the next.
Daniel Lentz, a Los Angeles composer. I saw him in concerts, about 10 years ago. And it's very intriguing to watch his ensemble perform live. It's pretty seductive. He has his foot in the minimalist door, and he does some other things. And this is a tune called Is It Love? Thank you. Longer than I recalled it the last time I heard it. Daniel Lentz's from On the Leopard Altar, Is It Love? And it is simply deceptive, I think.
But talented.
Oh, yes, they did play tightly. And
tight,
it's a nice
tight,
pressing,
tight.
As you mentioned.
One of the last of the LP era from 1984, that on Teldec Virgin Vinyl with metal mastering. And on to another piece of a certain amount of simplicity and repetition. This is the last half of Rhys Chatham's An Angel Moves Too Fast to See for 100 Electric Guitars.
Why just the last half? Why not play it all? Play twice. No, play only as you wish. I think it speaks for itself.
Thank you.
Les Cent Guitares, the 100 guitars playing An Angel Moves Too Fast to See, the last movement of that by Rhys Chetham.
And I think it was a really amazing MIDI realization with the MIDI audience in the background.
And the MIDI, all those little MIDI foot drummers.
Exactly,
and,
right.
Yes, absolutely. Les Cent Guitares, the 100 guitars, which take this piece now and then to various places and are recently in Switzerland playing that.
Oh, did the Swiss buy it?
As simply deceptive or deceptively simple?
That's my question.
Ah, moi aussi. Here is Peter Van Riper, Synchronies, the same question. Thank you. Yep, we didn't lean on that volume control. That's how it ends. Synchronies by Peter Van Riper on the adverbial adjectival session of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar on WGDR Plainfield.
And that piece was simply deceptive.
You think?
Yes.
As opposed to deceptively simple.
Right.
Okay, well, our audience is welcome to give us an email at calvos@maltedmedia.com or call us if we're live at 802-4...
G-L-I-P-S-O-B.
I forgot the number, 454. No, 802-GLIPSOB.
7762?
I can't remember.
I changed my mind. It's deceptively simple.
I see. Let's go to some more deception, and you decide. This is Christopher K. Konigsberg's Artifact Number 2, Art Mix, Extraction and Reconstruction of New Sounds from the Pump in the Basement. From Brains, a CD of audiophile computer music by Christopher K. Konigsberg. That was Artifact Number 2, Art Mix.
That was pretty deceptive. I don't know if it was simply or simple, but it was pretty deceptive.
Let's go a different route. Let's go acoustic.
Oh, always a fan of acousticity.
Music by Linda Catlin Smith. Let's try this one out for simplistical acousticity. Acousticity. How did you say that? Acousticity.
I can't anymore.
Acousticity. I've been there. Little Venice. Music by Linda Catlin Smith. That played by the Chroma Ray Music Ensemble on their Chroma CD.
I was remiss in excluding this from my list of 100 on the Desert Isle. I had forgotten about this. That's absolutely lovely.
It's a beautiful piece. Very simple, and when she spoke to us about it in the interview that we broadcast, she talked about how she just spends time with those notes at just one at a time, carefully selecting how they'll be. I think that works. Very, very simple. Very
now, I'd like to pump a little caffeine into her and see what comes out.
Yeah, I know. We haven't heard any really pumping pieces from Linda Smith yet. Like to hear them. Here's another one. Here's one by Yannis Xenakis. This one called Concrete PH. Concrete PH. From 1958, the deceptively simple or simply deceptive Concrete PH by Yannis Xenakis.
I think it's extraordinary that he can get those flutes to play in tune that way.
And now one more.
From, this is several decades old, Elliot Carter, an old guard composer. This is from his String Quartet No. 2 from 1959. Thank you.
So what do you mean deceptively simple or simply deceptive about that one?
There's a theme that recurs that runs through this tune, as I recall, and it's a simple theme, and then there are all these bits that try to confuse the listener. Even though it's a little pointillistic, I always found a tune in this thing that I rather liked. Okay, so I'm wrong.
Well, we'll just listen to a bit more.
Yeah, that's the theme I was talking about.
I'm sure. And as our last piece today on the Calvos and Damien New Music Bazaar, James Tenney's ultimate almost in simplicity, yet in its complete version, all almost 12 minutes of it, hypnotic, captivating, and who knows, deceptive?
Sure.
Don't forget to check us out on our website, www.maltedmedia.com. Look for that link to Calvos and Damien. And next
there's a new listing,
the best
100.
Our top 100 tunes, Calvos's and Damien's, individual lists, independent of each other, chosen top 100 tunes. Do check the website for those top 100 tunes. And you can email us or send us brickbats or just...
Or money,
if you like them or don't like them. Next week, yet another interview. We are shuffling our interviews around and may well have one that's not scheduled. That's it.
Yeah.
For Anne Rising.
A production of Multimedia.